Hello and welcome to the Fantasy 411 podcast at MLB.com. Once again, I'm not Corey Schwartz. I'm not Mike Ciano. I'm Dylan Higgins, back here again this week, filling in one more time. And I'm not joined by Fred Zinke this week. I have another guest co-host with me. I'm joined by MLB.com's Steve Adams, co-worker of mine. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to the debut on the Fantasy 411 podcast. So
yeah.
I'll go smoothly. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Filling in the second week in a row. Glad to be able to fill in and come back and hopefully offer some more fantasy advice. Steve, we both work here at MLB.com over at the fantasy department, but you're also possibly better known for working over at MLB Trade Rumors.
Yeah. I've been working for MLB Trade Rumors for, I think, 8 years now in a part-time capacity at least, and I came on full-time about 2.5 years ago. So I am drowning in baseball one way or another between this and that and MLB.com virtually all day, every day. So looking forward to adding something else out of the pile with the podcast.
And it's a site that I'm sure most of our listeners, most hardcore baseball fans are pretty familiar with, and this is basically the craziest season for you. We got the trade deadline coming up, which is it's a good thing we have you here to talk about that. But also, what's your life like here in late July?
It's interesting. It's a lot of time staring at Twitter. It's a lot of time doing podcasts. It's a lot of radio appearances here and there around the country. We get, you know, requests for that frequently. So it's kind of cool to be to have morphed into this kind of go-to site for this time of year and during the winter meetings as well, and to know that, you know, we're read by baseball fans, but also by people in the media and also by people within the industry, you know.
Yeah. Front offices are still checking it too, which is weird, but it makes sense.
Yeah, it was cool, at the winter meetings last year, not only meeting you in person, but then, you know, meeting people from various teams and them saying, oh yeah, I read your site every day. It's good to meet you. It's, oh, that's interesting to hear. Like, thank you for telling me that.
But makes sense. Yeah. Well, we're glad you're making an appearance here at, 411. Again, it's a perfect time for that. We're going to talk plenty about the trade deadline. I talked with, Fred about it some last week, but it'll be good to get to it with you. But let's talk about some recent news first. We're going to go through some news, some pitcher ditch later, some buy or sell, but let's talk about some news. I know you just got done talking about this. David Freese on Wednesday night takes one in the hand and, sounds like he's going to hit the DL. It sounds like it's not going to be great for him, breaking his thumb, I believe.
I think it's actually his index finger. It was initially reported as his thumb, but now they're saying it's his index finger. It's in a splint for, at least the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Sounds like he says he's hopeful of missing only 3 weeks. He fractured a middle finger last year and missed about 3 weeks with that. Mm-hmm. So he's hoping this is going to be similar, but whether or not that's actually the case remains to be seen. It'll be at least 2 weeks, probably three, if not maybe four. We'll see how the recovery goes, obviously, once the splint comes off in a couple of weeks.
And what do you think that means for the Angels? And more specifically, what does it mean for fantasy owners?
Well, in the short term, it means that they're going to call up either Kyle Kubica or Caleb Cowart from AAA to fill in those third base at bats over the next 10 days at least. In a bigger picture, you know, they're already on the trade market looking at going out and acquiring somebody that they can put into the five hole behind Mike Trout and Albert Pujols. And while they may have initially been looking at left field, I think this now has to at least put them, you know, in consideration for looking at guys who can fill in at third base and then maybe move elsewhere. But really, I think it just kind of increases, the likelihood that they'll really, you know, put an emphasis on finding somebody that they can slide into that five spot. Freese has been about league average with the bat all year long, you know, by OPS plus the weighted runs created. He's about a league average bat. And I think they're looking for a little bit more than that. To stash behind Trout and Pujols.
Yeah, especially against righties. Like, Freese kind of does most of his damage against lefties, and he's great. But against righties, who they obviously see more often, can ask for a little bit more from a number five hitter. In terms of fantasy, that's maybe one of the best places in baseball to hit, behind Trout, behind Pujols. Anybody that gets traded over there you would think, depending on where they come from, probably getting a pretty good bump.
I don't think you can ask for much more to be hitting behind Trout and Pujols the way they're going this year. So yeah, it's definitely going to be a boost to somebody's fantasy value if they go ahead and do that. As far as immediate impact for Kubica and Cowart, I mean, probably players in AL only leagues might want to look at them if they're looking at replacing Freese in the short term. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that either one of those guys is going to have an immediate mixed league impact.
Yeah, not a lot of upside there with those guys too much. And then do you see any specific guys who might get traded? I mean, you think a third base in the market there. I mean, off the top of my head, what? Chris Johnson, Aramis Ramirez? Is there any big third baseman that might be on the move?
Yeah, both of those guys that you mentioned are certainly available. I think Juan Uribe is another, you know, potentially available person who can kind of move around once Freeze comes back.
Back to Los Angeles for Juan Uribe.
I'm not saying that, it's just the possibility.
Sure.
But, you know, Kelly Johnson, you know, another third baseman who can kind of, you know, move around. I think that's the type of person they're going to look for.
Yeah.
With a guy like Ramirez, he's a strict third baseman. And so once Freeze comes back, you're looking at, you know, putting him on, putting Ramirez then on the bench. That doesn't make as much sense for them. So maybe somebody with some versatility who can step in, hit a little bit better than you can expect out of a rookie like Kubica or Cowart, making their, Kubica's debuted, but essentially his first extended look at major league pitching. You know, they're only two games up in the division right now. So I don't know that they really want to go ahead and trust somebody without any experience whatsoever, you know, put a total wild card in that spot and say, all right, this is yours to run with for the next month while we wait for our third baseman to come back.
They're definitely in the race. They're going to be aggressive, I think. Yeah. So keep your eyes on that because that could be a big fantasy boost for somebody moving over there if they're playing every day. All right. I want to talk about Kyle Schwarber. Had a huge day on Tuesday and he's back up and he's getting an opportunity because of an injury and just pretty much making the most of it so far. There was not really much question if you could hit. People wonder if you can catch. That doesn't matter so much for fantasy, but so far, so good. Have you been paying much attention to Kyle Schwarber? I mean, did you go and grab him in the leagues you could?
I'm in a lot of keeper and dynasty leagues, and I actually was unable to get Schwarber in any, and it's very sad to me. My one hope was in the Trade Rumors Redraft League, and unfortunately, Jeff Todd was working at the site when Schwarber got called up, and so he saw the tweet like the moment that it was announced, and within 10 seconds of Schwarber being recalled from AAA, he was on Jeff Todd's roster. So yeah. I am Schwarberless across the board, but do like him. I don't think it particularly matters if he catches or not. Obviously, it would be a big boost, but he's hit 333 with a 429 on base and a 613 slugging percentage in his minor league career. Yeah. 34 homers, more than 100 RBIs in 147 games.
OPS over 1,000 in the minor leagues. Like, dude can hit.
Yeah, that's not going to transfer over to the majors. Don't get me wrong. Maybe it will, I guess. I shouldn't completely rule it out, but he's probably not going to hit that well in the majors. Certainly not immediately, but he doesn't need to. He doesn't need to stick at catcher. He can realistically, you know, the numbers that he's going to produce will make him a perfectly serviceable outfielder down the line for years to come. So. Mm-hmm. He's keeper league gold right now, for sure.
Yep, and pretty much in all formats. I mean, it's simple analysis, not that helpful, but go grab him if he's there. I don't know that I would sell the farm to trade for him, but I wouldn't also be selling at the same time either. Like, I wouldn't grab him and just flip him. Like, he seems legit, especially if he's going to fill in at catcher for you. So
yeah, he's probably going to strike out a fair amount early on. He's struck out almost 30% of the time so far, I want to say, but He has huge power. He can hit for average as well. I think he's a real nice piece to have in any format going forward.
Yep. And then on the other side of the ball, how about Aaron Nola came up and Phillies fans were waiting for something to look forward to, and their farm doesn't always produce, you know, great results. But Aaron Nola, people have been excited about that. He was drafted 7th overall in 2014 and, you know, in those parts of two seasons, been good in the minor leagues. Finally makes his debut the other day and was awesome outside of allowing a homer to the opposing pitcher in Nate Carnes. It was a really fun game, but Aaron Nola, at least on my side, just like Kyle Schwarber, you got to go grab him, right? Got to pick him up if he's sitting there and at least take a flyer on him.
Yeah, I think absolutely, especially if you're in, I mean, if you're in an NL only format, it's an absolute must add. He's a great person to have in deeper keeper leagues if you can keep, you know, a fair amount of people. But yeah, even in mixed formats, I'd give a look to Nola. He's not necessarily a guy who's going to come out and overpower a lot of hitters, strike out 10 hitters per nine. He's not one of those power arms. I know he struck out 6 in 6 innings in his debut, but he's more of a guy who has really, really good control, uncanny control for his fastball, it sounds like. And so he's somebody who you can look at because he's not going to walk anybody. Probably he's going to contribute really nicely in whip, and maybe more modest contributions in strikeout, but a really nice ERA. Probably not going to win a lot of games on the Phillies because I don't envision great run support or defense behind him. But he's definitely somebody who's worth a look in just about any format if you're looking for, you know, not necessarily that frontline starter, but somebody who can you can slot into the middle or the back end of a fantasy rotation. I definitely think he can help.
Right, and it's a good time in the year to be able to grab that if you've, you know, been looking at the waiver wire and there isn't much. We're halfway through the year, over halfway, and this guy pops up, can help you down the stretch. And it's about the best division in baseball to pitch in, too. You know, yeah. There's a lot of teams to beat up on in the NL East, so it's good.
He doesn't get to pitch against his own team, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. The other news that I feel like we got to get out of the way here is Zach Greinke just being superhuman, being incredible. You probably all know this, but I can't ignore it. In his last six starts, 43 2/3 scoreless innings, no runs, so it's made his ERA disappear. 42 strikeouts and 4 walks in that time. Allowed a 308 OPS in his last 6 starts. So not only has he been insane, but even more exciting, he gets the Mets on Friday. That's a game to watch. That's a must watch. That'll be great. I mean, what's the fantasy analysis on Zach Greinke? Obviously, you can't pick him up. And if you're going to trade for him, I mean, it's hard to go trade and buy high on a guy like this because the margin
is... This is the time to trade for Zach Greinke. This is not the time to go out and try to pick him up.
I mean, this doesn't seem like a mirage. Obviously, he's going to allow some runs. He's really good. I think he could be, you know, great down the stretch, obviously. But if you're going to pay full price like this, the margin is so slim for you to get a profit. And it's so easy to not get what you pay for. So, I mean, if you have him, you know, pump your fist. That's great. You could even sell high if somebody wants. But I don't see him, like, crashing to earth or anything.
No, I mean, he's interesting. He's not throwing as hard as he used to, and his strikeouts are down. So I don't think that he's necessarily taken some crazy step forward at age 32 or 31, whatever he's at. Uh-huh. He's kind of just stranding everybody he faces, which is great for the short term, but isn't a sustainable model for the long term. But it's Zach Greinke we're talking about, so he's really good in the first place. So when you have a pitcher who's really good, and then start stranding 85% of the base runners that he's allowing or whatever it is, you get a, you know, ridiculous streak like this. It's fun while it lasts, but I don't think that he's necessarily suddenly the best pitcher in baseball. I think he's been one of the 10 best pitchers in baseball or so for a while now, and we're just seeing a really great and somewhat historic streak from a guy who has been one of the best pitchers in the game for a while.
Yep, there's not a lot of fantasy analysis here. If you have him, enjoy the ride, you know, but I'm not really necessarily buying or selling. I'm just watching. I need to see it, especially against the Mets. That'll be fun.
That's going to be fun.
Yep. Okay, let's get back to this trade deadline, probably kind of the subject of what we're talking about here. So Fred and I talked about it last week because we saw it coming up, just to go over, you know, some policies real quick. If you have free agent money, depending on your format, or you have a waiver priority, don't hesitate to use it. It's not the time to, like, hold back and wait, because you might say, oh, this guy gets traded, but I want to – maybe another guy will come up and just spend it is basically the thing, especially in AL and NL-only formats where it can be a really big deal. Guys can come into your format out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, you know, what if Johnny Cueto goes to the AL, and all of a sudden that guy shows up? Spend 100% of the money that you have on those guys. Be aggressive, I guess, is what Fred and I were saying, because there's a good chance those opportunities don't come back. So, yeah, would you agree with that?
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to necessarily be Johnny Cueto. If Scott Kazmir ends up suddenly in an NL-only league, I'm in an NL-only format and need pitching, I'm going to spend every dollar I have on Scott Kazmir.
Right.
Because when was the last time that a pitcher, I mean, maybe Aaron Nola might be close to that good and you can get him when he comes up, but a guy like Kazmir materializing out of thin air, or even Samardzija returning to the National League, spend the money.
Yeah, don't,
you're not going to get a better, you know, don't hold out hope that maybe David Price ends up in the National League and pass on Scott Kazmir as a result. Take him when he gets there. Take the known commodity while it's there.
Yeah, don't get caught in the what-if game, basically. So, yeah, Fred and I were saying be aggressive here with the trade deadline and your free agent acquisition money, however that works, depending on your format. So we're going to talk a lot about these players that are sellers, guys that could be on the move. But I wanted to real quick talk about teams that might be buyers. And with the wild card format in recent years, it's kind of everybody, right? There are not that many sellers. There's way more buyers. Does anybody stick out to you specifically that you could see making some moves? We talked about the Angels looking for a hitter. That's a thing. But any other teams you're looking at, they're like, oh, yeah, they're probably going to go after a pitcher. Or, oh, yeah, they're looking for a bat.
Yeah, the Blue Jays, I'll be stunned if the Blue Jays don't add a pitcher. Now, moving to Rogers Center is not an ideal setting for any pitcher. So whoever moves there their fantasy value is probably going to take a hit.
Unless you're Marco Estrada, because we can't explain baseball every time. We'll get to him later, too. But
in which case, if Mike Fiers ends up in Toronto, which has been rumored to be somebody that they're interested in, he's basically the same pitcher as Marco Estrada. Yeah. So who knows?
Who knows?
But yeah, any pitcher who ends up in Toronto, they're going to probably see a boost in wins because their run production there is astounding, but mm-hmm. their ratios are probably going to take a hit. The place that I like, if you're looking at for a team to add a pitcher, the Royals, they found out on Wednesday that Jason Vargas needs Tommy John surgery, and they mm-hmm. found out not 24 hours after they had optioned Yordano Ventura to AAA because he just hasn't been effective of late.
Yeah.
They still have Jeremy Guthrie in that rotation. A lot of questionable arms there.
Yeah.
They really need to bolster the staff. And any pitcher, they're looking at the top of the market too. They've been connected to Johnny Cueto multiple times. Pitchers like that, if they go out and acquire, if they acquire Cueto, it's going to be ridiculous. But if they acquire any reasonable pitcher, you can expect the numbers to trend up basically. Given the spacious dimensions of Kauffman Stadium and given the fact that they're going to have Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar and eventually, once he's healthy again, Alex Gordon, Mike Moustakas, it's a great defensive team,
right,
behind them. So for me, that's the other team to watch for going out and adding a pitcher. You know, the Orioles, I know, want to add some pitchers. I don't know if they're necessarily looking at the top of the market, but they're definitely a team. Again, another good defensive club that could be adding pitching depth and probably also looking to add an outfielder, certainly.
The other thing about the Royals, it's not to be understated, is their bullpen is obviously awesome, and that can help your starter a lot less, you know, leads getting blown after you leave. So it's kind of a, you know, it's a perfect storm. It's a great place to pitch, basically. Could be a big boost for some guys.
I don't think there's a better place to pitch in the majors right now. And look at Chris Young.
Young's been awesome there. I mean, Edinson Volquez, who's kind of a enigmatic pitcher to begin with, but so far so good there. You know, he came from a good place to pitch in Pittsburgh, but Royals is easily as good. So, they've made Jeremy Guthrie passable.
Exactly. I was just going to say Jeremy Guthrie, outside of the one start where he gave up 11 runs at Yankee Stadium in like an inning, has been a pretty passable pitcher this year there. So they do wonders with the defense and the bullpen and the huge park there in Kansas City.
Yep. So keep an eye on guys maybe going to Kansas City. They could be buyers. They're having a great year. More importantly, the sellers, where guys are going to go. We're going to start. We did this last week, but we're going to check back in on closers because that's really the quickest way to change fantasy value in very stark ways is gaining or losing a closer's role. And like changing your park and your team can change things. But if you all of a sudden aren't getting saves anymore, a lot of those relievers are not fantasy relevant, or the opposite. They all of a sudden become must adds. So the top of the list, we went over this last week, Jonathan Papelbon is probably going to move, you'd think, maybe, but we thought that a year ago, too. And if he goes anywhere, 95% chance he's the closer wherever he goes, and he pitched well in Philadelphia, he'll pitch well wherever he goes. I don't know that there's much fantasy news regarding Papelbon in that sense, but behind him is Ken Giles, and that's going to be a big deal for him because he's likely to be handed that job, right?
Yeah, definitely. And he's, I think he has 80 something innings. I don't have all of his numbers in front of me right now, but I know for a fact he has 80 plus innings and he's only allowed 2 home runs in his career. Yeah. He has a sub 2 ERA. He struck out about 12 hitters per 9.
Great. He'll do fine.
The only thing stopping him from being an elite closer is the fact that Papelbon hasn't been traded yet.
Yep. So he'll be a must add. He's maybe an add now if you have the roster space and need the saves. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I say I don't think there's any reason Ken Giles should be available in any league right now, because for me, it's almost a certainty over the next week that Jonathan Papelbon is going to be traded, or week to 10 days, and Ken Giles immediately would shoot up into the top third of closers, in the game for me when that happens.
Yep. We said that last week and it's worth saying again, cause you should not be sitting on your waiver wire. What about some other less obvious ones though? What are you looking at in terms of bullpen shakeups going here into the trade deadline?
Sure. I think some guys that you can definitely see move, Aroldis Chapman's obviously been talked about a lot, as has Tyler Clippard. I think Jim Johnson's very likely to be traded. Francisco Rodriguez could find himself traded. And another one, Brad Ziegler, down in Arizona. Ziegler's a guy, he's got a relatively affordable option year on his deal, $5 million. So he's having a nice season. The D-backs, probably be fielding interest in him. He's probably not going to be a closer wherever he goes.
Right.
some team will look at him as a nice setup piece. And in that case, then you got to move down the line in Arizona and find, you know, who's going to step in next for them.
Yeah, which is kind of a messy bullpen, to be honest.
it's not great. It's looking like maybe Daniel Hudson.
Yep.
One person that I like, depending on the formats you're in, if you want to add them, is Randall Delgado, just because he has the starting pitching eligibility as well. And depending on how your league's set up, if you have a limited number of relief or pitcher spots, if you're in a league where you have dedicated starting pitcher slots, it's always nice to be able to stick a closer in one of those spots and get some saves that way.
Yeah. This is a good time to talk about our MLB closer report at MLB.com over at the fantasy page. We actually list not only all the closers, of course, but next in lines, and then save sleepers, kind of the top three of each bullpen, and kind of rank them and try to keep an eye on, you know, who would be the next guy to pick up. And you're right, we have for the D-backs, we have listed, obviously, Ziegler, and then behind him, Delgado and Daniel Hudson. And again, it's kind of a messy bullpen, but that is where I would go if Ziegler moves. And if you're a Ziegler owner, I mean, you can try and trade him right now real quick in case he loses his job in a week, see if there's another fantasy owner that, you know, wants to take that risk and hope he stays a closer. But you're right, it's not the typical closer profile, and he's done the job well there, but he could easily go and just become a middle reliever somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know that Addison Reed's pitched well enough to get the job back, and yeah. I think the Diamondbacks are very open and if not hopeful that they can find somebody to take him and the remaining salary that he has off their hands. So
how about in Milwaukee? You mentioned K-Rod, who's done fine. He stopped giving up a million home runs like he did last year.
Yeah.
And the Brewers are going to be strong sellers kind of across the board. They have been out since about May. So he could get going. And then behind him, Will Smith, probably, even though he's left-handed, but doesn't matter. He's been successful. Do you have any idea where K-Rod might go?
There are a lot of teams that really need bullpen help right now. Again, the Blue Jays are a team that really needs to solidify the back end of that bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
The Twins have basically no relievers except for Glenn Perkins, so they might have some interest in going and adding K-Rod as a setup man. It's a role that he's filled in the past. The Nationals have been looking at deepening their bullpen as well. There's somebody that could certainly stand to add him. The Giants could use a reliever also.
Yeah.
So a number of teams there that are probably looking for bullpen upgrades. I don't know that I think some teams, the Yankees and Royals are already buyers, but I don't know if they need to go ahead and add more relievers to this stacked bullpen that they already have.
Yeah. But it sounds like K-Rod might be at risk of losing his job though.
Yeah, he definitely could end up being traded into a situation where he's going to set up. And I think in that case, then, yeah, you look at Will Smith as probably the go-to in Milwaukee. Although they could, you know, Michael Blazek's had a really nice year for them too.
Yep.
So he's somebody who could step in. I think if K-Rod does get traded, I think it's worth, I'd probably add Smith first, but if you miss out on Smith and Blazek is sitting there on waivers, I would certainly add him and take a flyer to see if he ends up working his way into save opportunities, especially early on when guys first get the closer's role. If Smith struggles, even though he's a really good reliever, we've seen it in the past. If a guy struggles his first, you know, two or three save opportunities, they move to somebody else.
Yeah, the leash can start really short.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then Blazek might get the spot, and he's been very good this year, so he's probably second in line there.
When it comes to Chapman, if he gets traded, he's going to stay the closer, so don't worry about it. His replacement would probably be J.J. Hoover, who's not great, but competent. You know, also keep an eye out for Jumbo Diaz, but that's kind of a messy bullpen, too.
It is, and Tony Cingrani is a guy who misses a lot of bats as well. But he's left-handed, but obviously the Reds don't necessarily mind that.
Right. They're playing with him as a starter, maybe. It's a messy bullpen in Cincinnati. Yeah. You would have to be in a deeper format to really want to dig in there. Also, another one, Atlanta has Jim Johnson now in after Jason Grilla, and he's doing fine, but they're not that attached to him either. You could see him move, and I don't know that he would become necessarily a closer wherever he goes either.
No, I think Johnson, he has the experience, so if he ends up somewhere Toronto where it's just been kind of a mess for a lot of the year, I could see him getting the job there, especially since he's a ground ball guy with experience closing. But some of those teams I mentioned, if he ends up on the Nationals in a setup capacity, that he's not going to unseat Drew Storen.
Yeah.
If he ends up with the Cubs, maybe that's a spot where he still gets the closer's gig. But even if he goes to the Giants, I don't know if I see him unseating Casilla. So
yeah.
There's a pretty good chance that if Johnson gets moved, it's going to be to pitch in the eighth inning.
Yep. Okay, and then let's talk starters also. Could also make a big impact. Not as much as, you know, closers, but the big one we talked about, Johnny Cueto, could go somewhere. Johnny Cueto's been awesome when he's been healthy, and he pitches in not a great park and not in front of a great defense, and he's still been great. So it's not like he's going to end up in a worse situation, you would think.
No, I think wherever Cueto goes, as long as he's healthy, you know, the last start is concerning where he walked, whatever it was, five or six guys in four innings. That's concerning, and he's had, you know, a start pushback due to elbow concerns this year. Mm-hmm. So I think there are minor injury concerns with him, but it doesn't strike me as anything that's going to prevent him from being traded. I fully expect him to get traded within the next 8 days.
Yeah.
And he can't, I mean, short of moving to Toronto, he's probably not going to move to a less pitcher-friendly environment. And if he ends up in Toronto, he's going to have a lot more runs scored for him than he has been in Cincinnati, so his win total probably goes up anyway.
Yep.
So I don't know that he can move into a definitively worse situation. Johnny Cueto is going to be Johnny Cueto wherever he goes. He's one of the 10 best pitchers in baseball, and he's going to continue to produce as such, regardless of what, you know, team he's pitching for.
Do you feel essentially the same way about Cole Hamels? He's been pitching in Philadelphia his whole life. He's been fine there.
Yeah, I think Hamels has, again, maybe some minor concerns after the past two starts. I think people are worried about him, but there's nothing to suggest anywhere in the media that he has any kind of injury or anything like that. You know, one of his starts came and it was 102 degrees outside or something like that. So there's some factors there that can certainly impact a pitcher. I look at it as he's a guy who has a huge track record of performing in a hitter-friendly environment. And wherever he goes, again, he's going to have more run support. He's probably going to have a better defense behind him.
Yeah.
Even if the ratios suffer, and they're not likely to, because these ratios actually aren't where they usually are anyway, despite the fact that a lot of his peripheral stats still look pretty good. So pretty much wherever he ends up, I think his stock's going to go up a little bit.
Right. I feel similarly about David Price and even, say, okay. I feel similarly about, like, David Price. Like, David Price is not going to go somewhere and suddenly not be able to pitch. You know, these elite guys are going to have their value no matter where they go.
They're gonna be great wherever they are, and that's why every team wants to trade for them, and that's why they sign $150 million plus contracts in free agency. Because who wouldn't want that arm in their rotation?
Are there any of these guys that might move that you're kind of worried about or excited about, of things that they could, you know, their value could go one way or the other pretty hard?
Yeah, you know, I'd love to see Jeff Samardzija pitching somewhere other than U.S. Cellular Field with the terrible White Sox defense behind him.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to White Sox fans, but they their team, I think, ranks 29th in defensive efficiency this year.
Yeah.
They've been poor across the board defensively. I don't think it's done Samardzija any favors. So I think moving to a larger park and getting a better defense behind him will certainly help his numbers. On the flip side, I would be, I guess, a little bit concerned if Scott Kazmir or Dan Heron got traded, just because they're both pitching in giant parks right now. Kazmir has a pretty good defense behind him. And of course, he comes with injury concerns, and that's going to follow him wherever he goes, regardless of the team. I don't think Kazmir would necessarily, you know, turn into a pumpkin if he got traded somewhere else, but I do think the fact that he pitches in Oakland certainly helps his value. Heron, I feel like moving out of Miami would have a larger effect on his ratios, for sure.
Especially a guy, a little bit more of a contact guy, a control guy, you know. It's a good place to pitch, and he's had a good year, but I don't see him getting better going somewhere else. Yeah, I feel like he's already at his ceiling.
Yeah, I think that the trade candidate that I'm probably highest on among pitchers is Matt Latos. Mm-hmm. I think moving to a new team where he would have better run support will boost his record, and if you look at his numbers since he came back from the disabled list, they're otherworldly.
Yeah.
And it's not just that his numbers are better. His velocity, for the first time since he had knee surgery in 2014, his velocity is back up to where it was. He's added, since coming off the DL, about 2 miles an hour to his velocity. He's striking out a batter an inning. He looks like the guy who, for a long time, was posting a low threes ERA, despite the fact that he was pitching in Cincinnati. He's a guy that I have picked up in every league that I possibly can right now. I am beyond high on Matt Latos, and I'm fully buying him in any format going forward. I think he absolutely can be one of the 25 or so best pitchers in fantasy going down the stretch, and he's widely available. Probably going to move to a team who can score him a lot more runs and get some more wins.
Sounds like you'd even trade for him.
I would trade for him. I would absolutely buy low on Matt Latos right now.
Great.
I'm fully on board now that he has the velocity and the strikeouts back.
Yep. All right, and then real quick, any hitters that you're worried about? None of these big ones are really going to probably lose jobs wherever they go. You know, we're listening Justin Upton, Jay Bruce, you know, Carlos Gomez. Like, they're going to start where they go. But any of them you're worried about what could happen to them fantasy-wise, or you're excited, again, depending on where they might go?
I'd be worried about if say, Carlos Gonzalez or Charlie Blackmon, both of whom have come up in trade rumors, if one of them got moved. Coors Field is difficult for any hitter. Blackman's hit better on the road this year than he has in the past. Actually, 9 of his 12 home runs have been on the road this year. His OPS is pretty close to even between home and road, but historically throughout his career, he's been much, much better at Coors, which is
true. Makes sense.
Almost any hitter who plays at Coors. Carlos Gonzalez, same thing applies to him. I think Will Venables, somebody who can get moved out of San Diego, and if you look at Venables' career numbers, the opposite holds true for him. Petco's kind of held him back substantially.
Sure. Makes sense.
He's not necessarily going to become an elite bat with a new home ballpark, but if you're in an NL-only format or even a deeper mixed league and you're looking for some outfield production and Venables suddenly finds himself playing in a hitter-friendly ballpark or a more hitter-friendly ballpark anyway, even somewhere like Baltimore or something like that, then he is a guy who can suddenly probably have some value. To a lesser extent, same holds true of Justin Upton. Getting out of Petco will probably help any player, but Upton's got the kind of power that plays virtually anywhere. So
Upton could just use a better supporting cast, quite possibly. Going to a contender could help him there.
Yeah, and one more, I guess, Ben Zobrist as well. A lot of people talking about him moving from Oakland. He's hitting well anyway in Oakland, but again, he could find himself with a better supporting cast or at the very least in a better hitting environment, lose all that foul territory so he's not at risk of fouling out and shorter fences for more home runs. So Zobrist is definitely somebody whose numbers could tick upwards if he ends up playing in a better spot as well.
The only one I see that maybe could get a playing time change is Ben Revere, who produces but hasn't always been starting all the time in Philadelphia, even though he has, maybe more fantasy value than real-life value because he's such a speedster. Is really his one great tool, and he makes decent contact. But
he's for high average, yeah.
Yeah, if he goes somewhere and gets that starting job every day, because, again, they've been messing around a little bit in the Philadelphia outfield. But go somewhere, especially where he can get driven in more. It's not as scoring as many runs as he could in Philadelphia. He could get a boost. I could see him being real helpful down the stretch if he finds a new home.
Yeah, and he's been connected to some good teams too. I know that the Angels have taken a look at Ben Revere, and if you think about putting him on top of the lineup with Pujols and Trout behind him, that's certainly going to, boost his value quite a bit. A lot more scored there, you would think. The Pirates have looked at him as well. And again, having Andrew McCutchen hitting behind you as opposed to there's not much in the middle of the Phillies lineup right now save for Michael Franco. So yeah. I think virtually anywhere he moves, you'll see a boost in his run total for sure and probably in his playing time as well.
Yep. Okay, let's do some quick pitcher ditch. We're going to look at Thursday through Sunday and just pick out some guys that are kind of interesting to us and real quickly say in or not in, not only for this start, but also down the stretch. And hopefully going through Sunday can help some of you guys, not only obviously with your regular fantasy leagues, but in head-to-head that maybe you start streaming to try and catch up at the end of your week. So I'm going to start with you as a Twins fan. Irvin Santana, how are you feeling? He gets the Angels on Thursday, his former team.
The way the Angels are going right now, I wouldn't feel good with anybody against the Angels. But, It's going to be his fourth start of the year. He's had two decent ones and one really, really not decent one. I ditch him that day. He's not somebody that I trust on the road in that, even though he's familiar with the stadium. Also a little concerned with the fact that in his last start, it took him until I think the eighth inning or the seventh inning to get his first strikeout. Like to see a little bit more consistency in him in terms of missing bats before I start plugging him in there against really top-tier offenses. It's weird to call the Angels a top-tier offense right now because they were struggling to score runs for so long, but they're really clicking right now. And Trout and Pujols and Calhoun, they have some really nice bats there. So I'm steering clear of Irvin that day.
All right, I got a confusing one for you. Drew Hutchison. Here's the thing with Drew Hutchison this year.
No, not Drew Hutchison.
Insane reverse splits this year. A 699 OPS to lefties. He's right-handed, so he's shutting down lefties, but he's allowing an 884 OPS to right-handed batters. So bad reverse splits. And he's shutting people down at home in Toronto, 575 OPS at home, and it's usually a terrible place to pitch. But on the road, his OPS allowed is over 1,000. So he's killing lefties at home in Toronto, but ruined by righties and on the road. So he's going to Oakland. Oakland has some good lefties, and it's, I don't know what to make of Drew Hutchison. Like,
everyone knows what to make of Drew Hutchison. Drew Hutchison is the true enigma. He might have, well, I would say he might have leapfrogged another guy who's starting on Thursday, that being Ubaldo Jimenez, but yeah. Ubaldo might still be the ultimate enigma, but Hutchison is baffling to me this year. You look at his peripheral stats, and his strikeout rate's down, but not hugely so. He's striking out better than 8 hitters per 9 innings. His control's actually improved. He's getting more grounders than he was last year. He's basically just getting slaughtered in terms of his average on balls in play and the fact that he can't strand any runners to save his life right now.
Yeah.
I have such a hard time giving up on him. I finally actually just recently cut bait on him in the one league where I was clinging to him. I gave up, and I kind of regret it because he still holds promise to me. In Oakland, as foolish as this is, I'm buying him. I probably shouldn't be, but I'm in on him for Oakland.
I'm scared for the home road splits, but I'm also admitting I have no idea what to do with Drew Hutchison. Very interesting pitcher, but hard to pick. Feeling adventurous, he has upside, but I'm scared. I have John Lackey at Kansas City. John Lackey's having a good year. I just wanted to point out, though, Kansas City, they've only struck out 544 times this year. That's last in baseball. Boston is 29th, and they're at 625. That's way more. Kansas City does not strike out.
They don't strike out whatsoever, and that's, I mean...
That makes them a bad matchup.
Yeah, it does. It's nice to pitch in Kansas City. Again, big ballpark, but... It's not an ideal thing to face a Royals lineup that's going to consistently be putting the ball in play no matter what against you.
Yep, and they're scoring more runs this year. So Lackey's having a good year, but ditch on him and just about anybody else going to Kansas City. Pass on those guys. All right, let's look at Friday. I just want to talk about Justin Verlander at Rick Porcello. Pretty much just because their teammates facing off against each other, but also they're both just been a mess. Like, ditch on both these guys, right?
Yeah, I know the Red Sox have been struggling to score runs, and Verlander's tantalizing because he's Justin Verlander, and you feel like he should be able to put it together, but I don't know how you trust him at this point.
No, he's been bad.
He's got an ERA. Is it still over 6? I feel like it's still over 6. He hasn't looked anything like himself this year, and I think if it weren't for the fact that his name is Justin Verlander, he probably wouldn't be owned anywhere.
Right.
I mean, you're hanging on to him for the upside and the name value there, hoping that he can turn things around, but... To this point, he hasn't given us any indication that that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
I think the uncertainty surrounding him is a large part of the reason that the Tigers have been kind of painted as potential trade deadline sellers because they don't feel like they have the pitching to compete with Verlander being a question mark and with the struggles of Alfredo Simone and Shane Green.
Yep. So ditch on Verlander and Porcello. No thanks. Here's one of my favorite guys to talk about. Erasmo Ramirez was kind of a sabermetric darling for a long time. Everybody was waiting for it. He'd flash some potential at times. It never happened. And then here it is. He goes to Tampa Bay. It was rough when he started at Tampa Bay, but I'm going to read you a game log real quickly. These are just earned runs going back. His last 9 starts.
Don't check this
out. one run, 0-0-2-1-0. That is 7 runs in his last 9 starts back to May 30th. That's a 1.29 ERA in his past 9 starts, a 5.51 OPS against, 41 strikeouts, 10 walks. The point is, Erasmo Ramirez is on fire, and people are not picking him up. He doesn't go that deep in the games. The Rays like to have the short hook. They like to go to their bullpen. You see them do that to Nate Carnes, too, who's another guy I like. But... he only went 6 innings and allowed 1 run. Like, that's useful every time. So, I love Erasmo Ramirez. He's going to Baltimore. That's not a great matchup, but when he's this hot, you gotta take anybody that hot. So I am pitching Erasmo Ramirez, and I am telling you all to grab him off the waiver wires if he's sitting there.
Yeah, I have to agree, and to your point about him getting the early hook in games, I feel like that's probably actually to his benefit, because he's a guy I know in the past has struggled facing lineups, facing hitters, for the second and third time through a batting order. If they feel like he kind of falls apart after he's faced everybody twice, gone through the lineup 2 times, then sure, pull him out of the lineup, and you don't get 7 or 8 innings of great ERA, but hey, 5 scoreless innings, or 5 1/3 scoreless innings, whatever it is, is still 5 1/3 scoreless innings, and he's getting a decent amount of strikeouts.
Yeah, so. You gotta get him. Yep. Next up, again, your Twins fan, Phil Hughes gets to face his former team. Yankees are coming to town. At least it's not Yankee Stadium. But what's up with Phil Hughes this year? After breaking out so hard last year, it was great. Doesn't seem the same so far in 2015.
Yeah, no, he hasn't been as good this year. And it's because he's not really striking anybody out. And that is in part because he's not throwing as hard as he was last year. I feel like the control with Hughes is still really, really good. He's walking less than a batter per nine innings. But he's always been homer prone. The home run problems that plagued him previously in his career have kind of come back this year. Pitching at Target Field, like you said, is certainly better than pitching at Yankee Stadium. But for me, without the velocity that he's thrown, without the added, you know, strikeouts, he's fooling around 5.5 strikeouts per nine innings. So that's not going to get it done for the most part, especially not when you're not a ground ball pitcher. For me, yeah, I'm ditching him against the Yankees, even though he's pitching at home, even though he's been better lately. I just don't trust him without the strikeouts.
Yep, that's a ditch for me also. And then another guy on Friday I know you want to talk about, Chris Tillman, had a 3.34 ERA last year in 34 starts, pretty good. And then this year, not so much. He had a much more troublesome year. But in his last four starts, 1.40 ERA, 24 strikeouts, 3 walks. You seeing some upside here with Tillman?
Yeah, and it's funny because Tillman's a guy that I've kind of pegged as overrated in the past, but now he's pitched so badly to start the year that he's actually moved into the underrated territory.
Yeah, swung the other way.
Yeah, he has. And like you said, a 24-3 strikeout to walk ratio over his last four starts, spanning 25 innings. I don't know that he's suddenly going to break out as the ace that some people build him as in previous years when he had the ERA in the low threes in Baltimore, but he's not facing a really imposing lineup. He's going to the Rays play in a relatively pitcher friendly park. I'm on board. I'm pitching Chris Tillman going to Tampa Bay for sure.
Yep, I think that's a good matchup for him to stay hot in Tampa Bay. Saturday, we mentioned him. Marco Estrada goes to Seattle. Good place to pitch. Not a scary lineup. Marco Estrada has had his inconsistencies, but for whatever reason, he's figured out how to limit the home runs and. He's been amazing this year, and he's been bad this year, but overall a 3.22 ERA and a 1.12 whip. That plays in all formats, and this is a good matchup for him. If you had pitched him all year through his ups and his downs, you got good numbers, and so I trust him here in a good matchup going to Seattle. I'll take Estrada. It's a little bit volatile, but I'm okay with it because you'll get your brilliance out of him too. Are you okay with Estrada going to Seattle?
Yeah, he's pitching great lately, and the Mariners, their difficulty scoring runs is well documented, and particularly the fact that Safeco Field is such a run suppressing environment. I think it's a great matchup for him. And we talked earlier about the stacked offense for the Blue Jays. Anytime he takes the hill, he's got a good shot to get a win just because the Blue Jays are liable to go off for, 10 runs on any given day.
Yep. So I'm not going to pretend that I fully understand Marco Estrada. I mean, he's allowing less home runs, but I'm in. Let's talk about Carlos Carrasco going to the White Sox. That is beautiful. He was a very popular sleeper in the preseason, had great numbers last year, broke out. A lot of these peripheral numbers at Sabermetric people like a lot. This year, 128 strikeouts, 24 walks. That's awesome. That's led to a 2.81 FIP. But his ERA is 3.94. So on paper, he looks like he's underperforming. It's never always that simple. But if you want to, glance at it, you just kind of think he's got to be better than this, especially given his control numbers. And a lot of people would assume that the Phillies have scored the least runs in baseball. But congratulations, White Sox. They've taken the crown. The least runs scored in baseball are the White Sox right now. So Carlos Carrasco getting the White Sox. Should be pitching better. I don't know that I'm fully on board as a buy low, go trade for him, but I don't think you would be crazy for trying to go after him. And yeah, it's a good matchup. So I buy here, and I think I buy for the second half as well.
I buy here, and I buy for the second half. I'm a big Carlos Carrasco backer. I was throughout much of the second half last year. Mm-hmm. I think much in the same way that Corey Kluber really struggled early on this year over the first month, and then has kind of smoothed things out since. Mm-hmm. I think you can see a similar turnaround in Carrasco. I love him in the matchup against the White Sox, even if it's in Chicago, which is homer friendly. That's a team that strikes out about middle of the pack throughout the league. So he'll definitely have the opportunity to rack up some strikeouts there. And like you said, they are not scoring runs at all right now. So I'm fully on board with that matchup.
That's actually going to be in Cleveland, and it's against Chris Sale. But I mean, do you chase wins? Are you worried about that at all? Like, it's not good that he's against Chris Sale, but still wouldn't avoid him. It doesn't mean he's going to do poorly. You know, maybe less likely of a win, but he should still rack up some pretty good innings, yeah?
Yeah, no, I'm fully on board with him, both for this start and for the second half. The White Sox, I mean, yes, he's facing Chris Sale, but I don't feel like you can strategize based around something as unpredictable or a stat as unpredictable as wins. It's fairly arbitrary, like many fantasy stats can be, but there's no real way to plan for it. I think you look at who he's going to go out there, who he's going to face. He's facing a team that strikes out middle of the pack around 20% of the time. He's pitching at home in a pretty decent environment for pitchers. And like you said, the White Sox aren't scoring runs whatsoever. They're scoring less than the Phillies. I don't know how you don't take him there. I'm fully on board for this matchup as well as the rest of the second half. I would be fine advising people to go out and try to swing a trade where you can buy low for Carrasco.
Yep.
One more that I like for Saturday, and I'll just go on it briefly, is Ruby De La Rosa.
Yes.
He's facing the Brewers, who can score some runs, obviously, with some big bats in the lineup, but it's a really right-handed lineup, and Ruby De La Rosa has just carved up right-handed batters this year.
Yes.
They're hitting .218 against him with a .267 on base percentage and a .327 slugging percentage.
Yep.
He's faced 243 righties this year, and those are his numbers against them. He's not widely owned, but he does miss bats. He's had a definite Jekyll and Hyde feel to him this year, but it's a really, really right-handed lineup. I'm fully on board with him for that one as well. He's striking out 26% of the right-handed hitters he faces this year, which is pretty nice.
You know who he reminds me of? I'm fine with that too. You know who he reminds me of is last year, Kyle Gibson had these really crazy stats about how he either allowed 0 or 1 runs or like 6 or 7 or more. Like, he's either amazing or he just melts down. And we got a little bit of that from Ruby De La Rosa this year, too. He's been brilliant, and he's also been messy, and not a lot of in-between. That's a little bit of a coy segue into Sunday. Kyle Gibson gets the Yankees, and I know you want to talk about Kyle Gibson.
I do want to talk about Kyle Gibson, and not solely because I am a Minneapolis native and a Kyle Gibson fan. Kyle Gibson's last 13 starts, I think he has this reputation as a pitch-to-contact guy because that's what he's been for most of his career. Mm-hmm. But if you look at his last 13 starts, first off, former first-round pick who is projected to be probably more than the number 4 or 5 starter he's looked like for most of his career so far.
Mm-hmm.
Last 13 starts, he has a .328 ERA. He struck out 8 per 9 innings, which is the big thing in that time. I don't think people realize how many bats he's missed over the past couple of months.
Yep.
Walked 2.4 per 9, and he's got a ground ball rate of 56% in that time. He's been outstanding, and I love him as a buy low for the second half. I think he should be owned in any mixed league, and he's a guy who, if he's owned in an AL-only league that you're in, or just a deeper mixed format that you're in, he's somebody that I would target as a buy low because I think he can have a really, really nice second half.
Mm-hmm.
The ERA has looked good all season, but he hasn't been striking out many hitters, or he didn't strike out many hitters through his first 6 or 7 starts. He's really turned a corner in that regard, and to me, he looks like a different pitcher right now.
Yep. I'm fine with that. He'd be a sneaky guy because he has that reputation of not being good, so you could get a value there. We talked about Aaron Nola. He gets the Chicago Cubs. They strike out plenty. Aaron Nola's exciting. Not a great matchup, but there's enough strikeouts there that I'm interested in him. Wei-Yin Chen goes to Tampa Bay. Wei-Yin Chen has been sneaky good since about the second half last year. ERA below 3, has great control, not a lot of strikeouts, but, I mean, there's not much to not like here. The Rays can hit lefties a little bit, but I trust Wei-Yin Chen, and I trust how he's done. He's not gonna light up the box score, but I will pitch Wei-Yin Chen. You like him?
Yeah, I think he's kind of a guy that I've thought of more as like a 4 ERA guy over the past few years, but he's upped his strikeout percentage. He's throwing more 2-seamers, so he's getting a little bit more ground ball over the past couple of years. And maybe now he looks more like a 3.50-ish ERA guy or a 3.40 ERA guy. I do think his ERA, which the sub-3 ERA, is going to regress in the second half, but I think he's kind of taking that step from this is a guy who I think of as an AL-only pitcher to somebody who can, you know, hold down a spot in a mixed league rotation.
Yep, absolutely. Let's also talk about Andrew Heaney. He's been awesome so far, 1.57 ERA, 2.97 FIP, but it's not like anybody thinks his ERA is still going to be under 2. But he's shown great control so far. This is a former top prospect. It's a great left-hander. I don't know that it'll be this hot, but he's shown that he can pitch in the major leagues. I'm in on Andrew Heaney. He goes to Texas, which is an okay matchup, but I'm just in general. Do you believe in Andrew Heaney?
I do. I think there were some questions about him after he struggled in his first go around with the Marlins. Then he got flipped real quick to the Dodgers and then to the Angels. And I don't think he was great to start off in AAA, but he's really looked nice thus far. Like you said, his control's been very good. I'm buying Andrew Haney for the second half of the season.
Yep.
I think must own in AL-only formats and certainly worth a look in mixed leagues as well.
Yep. And then Matt Moore has come back. Matt Moore had a whole bunch of potential, was a real top prospect, and just hasn't shown it since he's been back. Always had control problems, and it's often said that control can be one of the last things to come back after Tommy John surgery, and it's not back for him yet. So in your mixed leagues, I don't need him yet. Like, you have to take a flyer on him in the deeper formats, but
he never had great control to begin with in the first place.
Yeah.
So he's a guy who, if you take a guy who is walking 4-ish hitters per 9 innings anyway, and then, you know, strip his control down a little bit, it wouldn't surprise me to see him walk 5 guys per 9 for the rest of the season as he kind of struggles to get back to the point where he was.
Yeah. Hopefully still a bright future ahead of him, but right now I'm watching him but not using him. Ditch him in Baltimore. It's not a great matchup either. And then the last guy I got to talk about on Sunday, Mark Burley, not to give you the Erasmo treatment, but just been amazing since June 3rd, 9 straight quality starts, a 1.52 ERA, and a 5.93 OPS against. Just Mark Burley's on fire. There's not much to say. He's not going to rack up a ton of strikeouts, but he's trustworthy, and he's on a stretch right now. So he goes to Seattle. As long as he avoids Nelson Cruz, because Nelson Cruz can hit lefties, he's going to be fine. So I'm pitching Mark Burley.
I'm pitching him too. The Mariners, again, one of the worst offenses in baseball. He's pitching at Seattle, and he's got the Blue Jays lineup behind him. I'm fully on board.
Yep. Okay. One last one. Shane Green goes to Boston. You've ditched on Shane Green, right?
Rowski's. I ditched on Shane Green for most of the season, and I'm ditching now.
You should all have ditched. All right. Then let's, real quick, before we close out this podcast, let's look at some quick buy sells. We talked about a bunch of pitchers. There's some hitters. I know you're raving about John Jaso. John Jaso's finally back. He, hit the DL after, the first day? He seemed to be, it was day-to-day. He hurt himself on opening day, if I recall, and it was day-to-day, and then it took a few months for him to come back. But he's back, and he's been hot, right? On John Jaso?
I'm in on John Jaso. He's not going to hit 360 or whatever he's at right now. I think he's got an average on balls in play over 400, but he's been a sneaky good hitter for a lot of his career. He's a huge on-base guy, especially if you're in a league where you can stash multiple catchers, or play multiple catchers, I should say. He's great in two-catcher formats. He's great in AL-only formats. He's not going to set the world on fire, but he hits right-handed pitching really well, and I think he's an underrated hitter in general who can be really useful if you deploy him correctly.
And they like to bat him leadoff. What's not to like? So
more plate appearances for batting leadoff. If he's facing a right-handed pitcher, put him in there and let him do his thing, and he hits righties very well.
Yep. How about CJ Cron heating up? He's been batting well over 400 since he came up at the end of June, and he has 4 homers also. Not great position eligibility, kind of a corner guy for you, but he's been red hot too. You got to pay attention to CJ Cron, who, I mean, a spot has now opened up, in that Angels lineup. You could see him not playing third base, but at least batting fifth.
Yeah, and he doesn't, he's not somebody you want to jump on in on-base percentage leagues. He's kind of got that Mark Trumbo feel to him as a right-handed hitter with some good power who doesn't walk all that much. But he hasn't struck out a ton this year or in general throughout his career. He is kind of like a middling or a low 20s strikeout rate. But, former first-round pick, he's got some power. And looks like he can hit for a capable amount of average. And in that Angels lineup, if he ends up hitting fifth behind Albert Pujols and Mike Trout for the short term and eventually falls into the sixth spot, if they go out and acquire somebody to put their batting fifth, he's going to have a lot of people on base in front of him. It's a good spot to be in if you're CJ Cron.
Yep. And then I want to talk about two Rangers real quick. Shin-Soo Choo hit for the cycle the other day. Congratulations to him. That's awesome. Still trying to figure him out, though. He's been losing some playing time, and they claim that he's not losing his job, but they're being pretty ambiguous about it. He's a hard guy to figure out. What are you thinking on Chu in the second half?
He looks now like he's kind of fully submerged into that that platoon player role. He's never hit lefties well, and that's always been a big knock on him. But the thing with Chu was, 3 years ago when it was, the one knock on him is that he doesn't hit lefties well, he still had a .340 on base percentage against lefties. So they left him in there all the time, and he'd hit the occasional home run against them, he'd hit the occasional hit against them, and he had crazy good numbers against right-handed hitters. This year against lefties, all of his rate stats are under 300. He has about a 240 or a 235 on base percentage against lefties, where that used to be, you know, 320, 330.
Right.
And now his on base percentage against righties is only 340, 350. He's just kind of looks like he's getting a little bit older and falling into that, you know, spot where he kind of has to be platooned pretty strictly now.
Right. And every once in a while he flashes his skills, but I'm not buying for second half. I'm not in. It was great that he hit for the cycle. He'll still show some skills, but yeah.
He's probably going to end up with 20 home runs and he might hit 250, which is fine depending on your format, but he's not the player that, you know, you used to try to, you know, take in the first five rounds of the draft or whatever
it was. He's not running anymore either. So I want to talk about his teammate, the Rougned Odor on Wednesday, almost hit for his own cycle, which would have been fun, cycles on back-to-back days. He didn't get the cycle, but since he was called up in the middle of June, 370, 408, 648. This is a young guy who had struggles, got sent down, got him straightened out, and his comeback's been quiet because people aren't paying attention to the Rangers, but that's absolutely on fire for over a month, and he's at a position that can help in the middle infield. Rougned Odor better not be on your waiver wires in your leagues because he is becoming a must-play second baseman.
I agree. I feel like I'm always the pessimist because my immediate reaction is, well, he's not going to stay this good. But like, and he's not. He's not going to hit 370, and everyone knows that. But he's I don't think people realize how young he was. He got called up last year as a 20-year-old. He's still only 21 years old, and he has, you know, over a half season's worth of games in the majors now. This is a young kid who has some power, some speed, and I really like him as a potential guy who can contribute across, you know, all five standard fantasy categories. So, yeah, I think there's no reason Odor should be on waivers in any league still. He's not going to hit 370, but he could hit 290 and contribute very nicely in homers and steals.
Yep, and with his youth, he can get better. We don't know what he's going to be, but he can certainly grow. All right, and then last thing here on this podcast can put you on a spot a little bit.
Uh-oh.
Steve, buy or sell the Twins? What's going on here? Wild card team?
You didn't. Oh,
I did. Were you buying or selling? Give us the 60-second breakdown on how they've been doing it and if they're going to still do it.
Oh, man. Well, I love Kyle Gibson. I think he can take a step forward in the second half, as we said. Big on Miguel Sano. I think Miguel Sano should be owned across the board in all formats, especially keeper in Dynasty. But to me, they have nobody at catcher. They have nobody at shortstop. They have nobody in the bullpen besides Glenn Perkins. I think the fate of their season is going to depend largely on how they approach the next 8 or 9 days.
Yep.
They have enough shortstop options in the organization in Danny Santana and especially in Jorge Polanco that I don't think they're going to necessarily look long-term upgrades there. Maybe a stopgap. But for me, the places they're going to look are behind the plate. Potentially going for a long-term upgrade at catcher, and they need to add at least one or two relievers. If they can add a couple of relievers, solidify the bullpen, and get maybe an upgrade behind the plate, then I'll buy that they can at least contend for a wild card spot. The wins that they have are in the bank, so they don't, you know, those 50 wins aren't going away. They haven't gotten off to a good start to the second half. I think they have some work to do in order to stay relevant, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And if you ask me on opening day if I'd be talking shortly before the trade deadline as the Twins as a potential wild card team, I probably would have laughed in your face. So it's been a fun year to follow them. And I think they have the potential to get to the point where they make a firm believer out of me down the stretch in the next few days here.
It makes them exciting for sure. This double wild card thing, it has its pros and its cons, but it's exciting if nothing else.
It makes AL Central exciting because the White Sox and Indians and Tigers have kind of all disappointed. So you've got at least one surprise team there to give the Royals a run.
Twins chase the Royals are a surprise to be that far ahead too. So yeah, it's been good.
It's a fun division to follow this year for sure.
It's been good. Well, that should about do it for us here in this guest hosted edition of the 411. Steve, thanks for joining me. You can read me and Steve over at the fantasy page, MLB.com/fantasy. And Steve, of course, is over at MLB Trade Rumors, where I'm sure a lot of you will be checking out over the next week or so. A lot of stuff going on over there. Steve, you got anything else before we get out of here?
No, I don't think so. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. And yeah, it should be a fun few days here.
And over at MLB.com/fantasy. And of course, make sure to follow Fantasy411 on Twitter at Fantasy411. There's always articles going up and analysis, especially heading into the trade deadline. And we like to get your questions too. So make sure to tweet at us and follow there for some of the best fantasy advice from Steve and from myself, from Fred Zinke, and everybody at MLB.com. That should do it for us. We'll see you guys next week.